This episode of Road Dirt, the podcast, is brought to you by Northeast Georgia Motorsports, carrying Kawasaki, Can-Am, Suzuki, and now CF Moto. Northeast Georgia Motorsports is your go-to dealer for all things two wheels and four. You can find them at ngmrides.com. Welcome to Road Dirt, the podcast of Road Dirt Motorcycle Media and RoadDirt.tv, your down-home grassroots motorcycle brand covering what we like to call ride life, hashtag ride life out on the web. This is Rob Brooks, your host. Thanks for tuning in. And on this episode, we share a chat we had about a month or so ago with Brian Carroll, Hollywood film producer and director, and also the writer and director and producer back in 2013 of the noted motorcycle documentary called Why We Ride. We've actually collaborated with Brian and on some stories and some videos, and we've done some things together over the last few years. So we thought we'd give him a call and catch up and find out what's the latest, what's going on with him, what are some of the projects that Motovational, his nonprofit, is up to. And just for a lively chat with an old friend. So this is our interview with Brian Carroll. Well, Brian Carroll, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Rob, great to see you again. It's been a while.
It's good seeing you, my friend. Good talking with you. I appreciate you taking a little time to chat with us here for the podcast. For the two or three people in the world that may not know who you are, Brian Carroll is a film producer and film director. You've worked on some greats, man. You've worked on Die Hard. I remember watching Roadhouse years ago, City Slickers. Can't say I saw Free Willy, but I saw Titanic, and you've worked on some great ones over the years. But I tell you, I think what really gripped my heart was a little over 10 years ago when you wrote, produced, and directed the motorcycle movie Why We Ride. That just, to me, Why We Ride really is the defining motorcycle documentary of our time, you know. Right. Those of us that are, from 60 years old and younger, it's such a phenomenal movie. What was really the inspiration, just as we get started here, what was the inspiration behind your writing Born to Why We Ride? What was your inspiration behind that?
Well, you know, it started as like any other movie. We had a great script on a gentleman named Ed Kretz, who the motorcycle racing world, he started it. He's from from out here, first person to win the Daytona 200. Mm-hmm. Had a huge career. So, but we were having a hard time shopping that in this town. People didn't quite get it. So we kind of went to, on some shows I'd done in the past with Michael Mann, like Public Enemies and stuff, we would do a documentary. They kind of talked about John Dillinger. And then to help feed people, then when Public Enemies came out, they had a better idea. So we looked at trying to make a documentary about it, about Ed Kretz. And very early on in the stages, one of the first people we interviewed was Ed Kretz Jr. Mm-hmm. And I went up at his house in Denver and saw his dad's stuff and the bike he wanted on. And we talked for about 3-4 hours. Not an interview, we just talked. And about a good part of the conversation, it kind of hit me. We weren't really talking about motorcycles. We were talking about family. We were talking about his dad. We were talking about experiences. And it kind of hit me. My son was 10 or 9 or 10 at that time. And I'm like, I rode, motorcycles have been part of my life, my whole life. Yeah. And here I am and my kids aren't riding and I'm not even riding anymore. Last bike I had was a 93 KLR. And kind of what happened? And then I was like, wait a minute, why did this happen? And everything for me starts with why. Everything has to start with why. And I'm like, well, that's what we need to explore, is what is this ride and what the we and the why and this, all these things are going on. And we came back and me and Chris Hample, my writer, and James Walker, my producer, sat down and said, no, we need to make it. We're switching this around. Go back to our investors. We want to do what this passion. We want to do a movie about what this is. But no, we don't. We want to do about why. And that's when we started looking at the name and started coming up with this name. It's like, no, this is, let's be bold. Let's be blunt. Let's go. We're going to put it out there. Why We Ride. And let's just go after that. It's the why, which is what starts everything. We as us as a community and us as a whole. and ride, not about what we ride or Harley, whatever it is, the ride. And that's why we write Gamewood. And once that hit and you know it, it's kind of faith. You take that leap, you know, it's like James was out every day trying to raise another $1,000, and me and Chris were trying to find out what to write. And it's just one of those things, you take that leap and you know it in your heart and you just go. And that's where why we write came from, you know.
I like your two words you choose there is relationships and experiences. And Why We Ride really captured that. And what a phenomenal, that was the right direction, because
No,
it's resonated with motorcyclists, and even it's really been a tool and an attraction for people that maybe might not have considered motorcycling to ride for the experience, for the community, and the enrichment of it. It was really a great evangelism tool, so to speak, for motorcycling. So now you mentioned you had a KLR. What and you rode pretty much your whole life. How did you first get into motorcycling? I'm assuming it was as a kid, wasn't it?
it was a kid, but it wasn't like there was a choice. Everybody had was one. Everybody had a Swin, Stingray, or some kind of a bicycle, right? And then
And a dirt bike in the garage.
or like for us, we had the Bonanza mini bike my dad brought home with a Briggs & Stratton 2.5 horsepower engine in it. You know what I
Oh
mean?
yeah, yeah.
Everybody had one of those. Every camper had some kind of a Trail 70 or something strapped on the front of the truck with the camper on the back. So I look back at riding, and it wasn't like there was ever a, oh, I'm a motorcyclist or I'm going to be a rider. Just everybody had a motor. They were just around, and it didn't matter. You know, we were growing up in a little duplex. We didn't have any money, but we still had motor two-wheel vehicles. My dad got in 1968 a the you know 96 Yamaha 250 Enduro, and the very first picture of me on a motorcycle is I'm 2 years old alone sitting on top of
Sitting
that.
on with your dad
And
sitting
then
on the tank.
the only video, one of the few minutes of video of me at 2 years old or 3 years old was me, my dad pulling in with me sitting on that tank, holding on. Because I guess my dad told me a story. Every night when he got home, he was in the army. He would want to, I would be waiting there for him because we would jump on that bike, run up to the hills and pick wildflowers for my mom. So I don't remember that, but the pictures I saw, and I still have that picture hanging up on my wall. And actually, I have two 1968 Yamaha DT250s because of that. I actually have the oldest one in the country. I have number 52. It's a day one
Cool.
bike. You know what I mean? So it was, that was like, oh my God, there was something we had to do. It was like bread and water. It was just, we had them, people had them around. There also wasn't this like, oh, they were bad or oh, they're dangerous. Or I'm like, we were Gen X, man. As long as we were home by the time the streetlights came on,
Yes,
we were
that's
okay.
right.
You know what I mean? It's you know what I mean? It was just, we had a, it was a great time because we were kind of so free, and there was such a trust, and we were allowed to be kids. But that really was it's not like that defining moment. Now, my love and passion of motorcycles, like most loves or passions you have in your life, goes through different times throughout your life, and they mean
It
different
does.
things through that. You know what I mean? And where those
I
come in
agree.
and out. And your adventures, it's like, I mean, I read the Bible every morning, and as you'll read phrases over and over, and when you're reading that phrase of 40 compared to 20, because of what you experience, where it can mean something entirely different and guide you in a very different way.
True,
And
true.
I think the love and passion of motorcycles, because it's not a love of motorcycles, it's a love of the experience that you get from
Of the
it. I gotta,
experience and the relationships,
it
yeah.
really is. I'm not like, I can't say, oh my God, yes, I have my motorcycles, and I say I love them, but what I love is not, it comes on experiences. It's the experience that I have had, the person I've met, the relationship. So I would say it's like, I don't have a love of motorcycles. I have a love of the experience and the relationships and the life that motorcycles allow me to experience.
I would say it's more than a love of the motorcycle. It's a love of motorcycling.
It is. It's
Yeah,
it gives me
because
motorcycle.
motorcycling denotes the lifestyle, and the
Exactly, but
experience, right?
it's a
That's a good
key.
point.
It is, and motorcycles are like the key that give you access to something that only other people that have that key can have that access to. You know what I mean? And there's the great thing about motorcycles compared to flying or sailing or a lot of things is there's a price for anybody that can get in there. and have that same experience. You know what I mean?
True.
I can be on a $50,000 Harley CVO, and I can have somebody next to me on a 1971 DT250 with you know, that he bought for $3,000. We're both having
Yep.
an experience, right? And it's very
Yep.
much the same. You know what I
It
mean?
is.
And it really is. And at the end of the day, nobody sits on their porch and talks about what they have or what they didn't have. It's about what they did and what they didn't get to do. It
That's right.
really is about it. That's what we're here to. It's an experience. That's what
Yeah.
life is.
What was your earliest motorcycle that you remember that was your bike? What was, do you remember what your first bike was?
I'm going to go back to that Bonanza. I will never forget
It was
that.
the little Bonanza. Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
Was that little blue Bonanza. It just
Yeah.
so stuck out to me.
Yeah.
Just when it ran, it was awesome. When it didn't ran, I learned a lot about fixing stuff,
Wrenching on it,
Just me and my brother would just be in the backyard and just go in circle. I mean, we never had full lawn in our backyard. We had lawn with a dirt trail around the outside. You know what I mean?
there you go.
So we'd
Yeah.
be out there in circles and circles on that thing and just riding that. And so that was kind of like that. That's what I really remember because that's what we had. And then friends around me would start getting dirt bikes and stuff like that. And I remember riding those. But that, and then the next one after that was my dad got a thing called a Bronco Buster, which was this,
Bronco Buster.
it had like a big 8 or 10 horsepower pull engine on it. It was one of those you'd see them in like Tractor Supply Store or the auto
Yeah.
body places, and you'd bring them home and build them. And it had the two big balloon tires on it. And you know what I mean? And we'd sit on that. And then,
Gosh, I think I remember those. Yeah.
And so, and it had 2 wheels, and we'd ride. I mean, we'd get on and ride that thing. And then after that, really, it was my dad. We got a Kawasaki. It was called the Mule. What was it?
Kawasaki Mule.
It was the one. I think they were a 125, and it had a low and a high. So you had 5 gears low, and you push this lever, and then it had 5 gears high.
Oh my
So.
gosh, wow.
Yeah, I think it was called the Mule. It was a really cool bike. Because whenever something would come up used like that we could afford it, we would grab that. And then we rode that until, you know what I mean, until I came to California. And then
Yeah.
once you got to California, yeah, I remember California, you get your moped permit at 14 and a half. You get your motorcycle license at 15. You couldn't get your car
Wow.
license until you were 16. So everybody, and that was the 80s, and everybody had a moped.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You guys who had money had the Honda MB5s with alcohol bottles in them, turn these little mopeds into cafe racers,
Yeah.
and then you could have a motorcycle. So there's always a stage that we had, you know what I mean? And also California, because of the dirt bike scene, it was hard not. I don't remember too many
Hard not to
garages where there
ride out
wasn't
there, yeah.
something. You have 360 days of riding. Why would you not have a two-wheel drive,
For
something on
sure.
two wheels here? You know what I mean?
You know, it's
So.
interesting. You bring up a that you reminded me, and you brought it up when you first started. We really grew up, you and I are similar in age. We really grew up in a different culture. The 1960s, 1970s, into the 80s, and really into the early 90s for those that are younger than us, was an age where it's like every garage had a motorcycle. You know, there were dirt. I mean, it was like bicycles. You know, you had, you know, Schwinn's with banana seats and a little, either a, you know, a Coleman mini bike or, you know, a little YZ80 or something. There was all, it was just part of what, you know, what every family had. And I know that that's changed over the years, but we grew up in an era where you're right. We didn't think about it. We all, you know, yeah, of course every family had at least one motorcycle or mini bike or something. And we all grew up riding those things. So, and yeah, so I can see what you're saying. Southern California really being just a mecca for just off-road riding. Everybody had dirt bikes and things like that for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And that was, like I say, it was never, we never went to out to ride a motorcycle. We went on a family vacation, and there was a
Yes.
camper and a trailer and motorcycle, you know,
You
mini
just took them
bikes
with you.
and motorcycles, and it was just all things to do. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? We didn't have iPhones, so we had to actually go do something, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't have a pad, you know, you were working your thumbs on. You were you know, out in the environment every day. What was your first street bike? When'd you get into street bikes?
I was, you know, it was, you know, really, you know, it was that 90, whatever the first year of the KLR was, I want to say it was 90 or 91. Well, let me back up. My stepdad, who really kind of like raised us and, you spent a lot of time with him. he was from that Harley crowd from the 50s and 60s. He would ride to Sturgis in 2 days. He would ride 800 miles in a day on a seat this big. He loved Springers. And I would go ride with him on one of his Springers. They scared the hell out of me. Those bikes did not stop. You know what I mean? They were the weirdest thing, but so riding on street, I would go out with him on one of his Springers when we'd ride around here. Again, he grew up out here in California. He's a Van Nuys boy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he grew up on a Big Bear Scrambler and stuff like that. So really riding street bikes, other than, borrowing my friend's moped or something like that, it was being on those Springers with him, because that generation, man, they rode. They just rode.
Yes, they did. My father was of that generation, yeah.
Cowboy boots, 2 days to get to Sturgis, 2,000 miles, no problem. I remember when the helmet law came, he would put it on until he got to the Nevada border, pull over, the helmet
came. Take it off.
I still can't get him to wear a seatbelt in my car, so I get it. But that was that. But a Suzuki came out in like 85 or 86 with the quad racer. And out here, Pismo was giant. Pismo Beach. And I liked three-wheelers, but the quad racer was awesome. What you could do on this. So that was kind of like where I really was having a lot of fun on motorcycles at that time. And I was not 18, 19, so I could afford them now. I could afford a new bike.
Right.
But then I wanted to get, I was looking at I want to get something I can ride around, something more street. And I always loved the car. I always thought that was such an amazing race. And that BMW, that Bumblebee black and yellow Dakar bike in the early 90s was like, oh my, that's what I want.
One of the original, like what came to be called an adventure bike. Yeah,
exactly. And I was like, that is such a cool way to ride. And I was tall and have really long legs. And Kawasaki came out with the KLR. Unfortunately, the first year was horrible. Had no Kickstarter on it. It was electric start only. The battery was always dead. It had a metal tank. Not the greatest bike. But that was really my first, really an adventure bike was my first real street bike, was that KLR. And got that. And it was perfect for going up here in California. You never rode as much dirt as you think you do. Us adventure bikers always say, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that was it. That was kind of the one that just was like, I love this bike. And then when the next one came out, and that was the one that was kind of like where I really started, riding around. The thing though too is everybody had bikes too. So we were still riding a lot of other motorcycles because everybody had an RD 350 sitting in the garage. You know what I mean? Those were like cheap then because they just got the new Interceptor, or the new Katana, these amazing bikes that were coming out in the 80s. And being out here by the rock store, that's what you did on Sunday. But by the time you're 14 is you went up and you stood in Mulholland and you went to the Snake and you watched the guys race. You know what I mean? And then you see the Highway Patrol go up and then you see them race again. Or you go to the rock store and the wheel, which I'll be there this Sunday at the rock store. It's still your little kind of fun mecca. So even though that was your bike, you still got to ride other bikes. Somebody would show up with a new GPZ. It was like, ooh, let me take it around the corner. And you know what I mean? So
what a time to be into motorcycling for sure.
Yeah.
I can, it's just definitely works its way into your DNA, into your, into your soul for sure. And and really the KLR, such a fantastic do everything Swiss Army knife of a motorcycle.
Oh, it's funny. I didn't know then, but it became literally, that's the Armageddon bike. We're going to Armageddon.
Yeah, the Armageddon bike.
Carbureted. You can still work. You can literally drop the thing in the river, let it soak out, let it drain out a little bit, and it'll start up. It won't do 100, but it'll do 99. It literally is. I know a lot of guys up in Alaska years ago that do some of these big tours up there where they bring people in. I was like, so you use the BMWs? We're like, no, we don't want to work on those. We use the KLRs. So we got a lot of first-time people coming up to do this. He said, those bikes just run. I got a couple in the back of the truck. Something breaks. I pull it off that one, put it on this one. It still is a great bike. It's one of those just, no reason to change it. They did it for 20 years.
Oh, I know, man. It was a bulletproof design. Still is, they're still... Yeah. Even in the used app, the used bike world, I mean, those things are gold to find.
Oh yeah.
For sure.
For sure. So,
but what's in your garage right now? What have you got right now that are your go-to machines?
Well, my bike that I ride on the weekends is when You know, it's funny. I went to the street bikes. I keep saying I'm going to buy an MV Agusta Brutal. That's my favorite bike. And then
Beautiful
I go and sit on it, and I'm like, okay, I need to shrink 6 inches, and I need to lose 100. You know what I mean? It's one of the bikes I want. But anyway, I was going back and forth. I was riding. I really was loving I like the BMWs, but I'm a Triumph guy. I love Triumphs. I've always had
me too.
You know what I mean? I love Triumph cafes. I get one. My last Ace one, every one I bought, I say I'm never going to sell it. And then 3 years later, something else comes out, and I sell it and buy that. But I was getting into the Tiger 1200s. I was really liking that bike. And then they were going to come out with a new one right before COVID hit. So kind of got rid of that and was waiting. And this Harley Davidson Pan America came along.
Yeah.
Bike. I would never thought I'd own a Harley. I've had a lot of Harleys. Because of my nonprofit, I get to ride a lot of the new bikes that come out of the new Indians. I've always had a new Indian in my garage or a new Harley or stuff like that, you know, before COVID. So I was always able to ride those bikes. But when the Pan America, I'm like, you know, there's some about that bike. I like it. I always like stuff that nobody else has. What's the rarest? What's something that nobody has? And it pleasantly surprised me when it came out. I got the first one that, you know, that came out here to Moorpark Harley Davidson. Paul was able to get that for me. And I got on it, and it's thin, which I love. It's very tall, which I love. I didn't get the one that lowers because I didn't need that. It's 150 horsepower for a 560 pound bike is ridiculous.
That's amazing.
It's the only thing that I didn't love was once you've had a shaft driven bike, it's very hard to go back. And that's what the Triumph was in the BMW was shaft driven. Going back to a chain bike, but that's my go-to now. I when I first got it, I fattened it up, put the big bags on the, I don't do metal ones. I do soft bags. So if I dump it, I don't have to bend it out and shut the top. So I've been through that. So I fattened it out. And then now I went right back to, I love how thin it is. I just have my pipe. I have a bag on the left side. That way, if I want to carve through the canyons, I go on sport mode. We're going to go on long trips. I rode that bike to Sturgis and back. I've ridden that bike many times on my Y ride to the Quail up the coast. It's a great go-to bike. It's to only have like one bike that I really ride right now.
That would be your go-to.
That's mine for right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I miss having, I'd like to get a small Triumph again or something when I go through the canyons. I just miss that. I like a bike that can, how do I say this? You can stand up, and you got to make sure it's still underneath you. I like a smaller, you know what I mean?
That's what I've got. I've got a 2017 Bonneville 900 Street Cup.
Yeah.
It's my little, you know, and for my size, I'm a lot smaller. It's, you know, I hop on that and I feel like I'm one with the machine. So I know, and it's a perfect for trips for canyon carving, but that Pan America, we got a chance to ride it. We did several stories on it. Me and Phil and Ted Edwards, and we all got to ride it and do stories on it after it came out. You're right. It's, man, that was a pleasant surprise from Harley Davidson. They took the ADV world by storm with that bike.
They did. And they got, I don't know a person who has one that was a Harley owner. They're a lot like me. They're not Harley guys. We got them because of what they were. And then when we saw how they performed, because they originally reminded me a little bit of KTM, the way that engine works and the power and how that is. Mm-hmm. But it brought in a group of people who normally wouldn't be at Harley Davidson. You know what I mean? The only hard thing is I like my bike, but I'm not a Harley guy, if you know what I mean. So when you go down to the dealership, you're kind of like, yeah, I got it. But it's like, I'm not, this isn't, you know what I mean? That's kept this world going in this country. It's all about that.
So you're not going to get you a black leather vest with patches?
No,
on? Come on, man.
I still wear my old black Triumph Ace Cafe jacket. It's got checkers down the side, my big checker at my London, because I used to hang out in London at the Ace Cafe when I lived there. I will always have this, and one day it'll get worn out and I'll have it rebuilt, but I always have my Triumph jacket. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But it's a great bike.
It is. It is indeed. When you think about I probably already know the answer to this, but I just wanted to hear you articulate it again. Is motorcycling, if somebody were to ask you, because people have asked this before, you know, what does motorcycling mean to you? What does it mean to you? Why do you ride? Let's turn your movie question here. Why do you ride?
Well, the answer is, to me, it's when I feel closest to God. And what I mean that is when you're on a motorcycle, you're so concentrated.
Yep.
You're in the experience. Because if you don't, it will remind you very quickly you are not paying attention.
Yeah.
it's flying a motorcycle, and you're like that, but a motorcycle. But there's just everything is gone. There's a sense of, and I know we like to use the word freedom and all of that, but it's not that. It's a mental
deeper
state.
Yeah.
It's a very spiritual world of you can't worry about anything. So because you're put into this moment of just one, and that's why I do feel like it's really when I'm closest to God, because it is when it's that state when you feel like I say I'm in control, but I'm actually not in control at all. I'm the universe is here. I'm attached to a machine that can only work because I'm attached to it.
Right.
I'm in an environment that I'm experienced with unhinged. I still have open face helmets because I have to have that wind on me, or
you're
the adventure helmet
yeah.
where I have it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's times when you're completely attached and surrounded, and then there's times when you're completely at peace. And you know that because there is a transition as you come out of that, whether you're coming back home and pulling into the garage or stuff like that. So I seek that even greater. It's almost like when you're meditating. So I purposely really don't ride freeways. I try to ride canyons or farm roads or back roads because I seek that even deeper, that complete meditative state of just oneness. You know what I mean?
They call it flow. Yeah, I've heard it called flow.
Flow. There's times when, like, well, the two or three of us are out and we got our speakers on and we're having one of the greatest conversations of our lives, right? You know, so, you know what I mean? There really is that world. There's stuff. And the reason you know it is because when you're not in that mode, when you're on a motorcycle and you know you're not mentally should be on it, or you're doing something and I didn't look left or something like that. It reminds you so quickly.
It does, indeed.
You must be 100% in the now. Yesterday is gone. You know what I mean? Tomorrow isn't guaranteed. You are forced to be 100% in the now.
Yeah.
And unless you want, and that's when you truly know who you are and where you are is when you're in the now, because now is all you got. What I just said is already gone. That's not even now anymore. You know what I mean? It's got to go. It's like, and I'd say that's probably I think it's something we so seek, is to just be
good
in the now.
Definition of it.
You know?
It's a good definition of it.
Yeah, and if you allow that, it's so great. And also, I love the defineness of how it shows just how instantly and how short life is. Just the sudden, it's like, it's just, there isn't this, yes, for I get for as you grow older, there's a slowly fade out. But unfortunately, for a lot, it's just, it's over. It's boom, it's done, this life on this earth. So it only makes more sense to be in the now at all times, or at least seek that as much as you can.
Yeah, that's a good way to define it. You know, I wrote a story a number of years ago called Mystic Rhythms, kind of borrowed the title from Rush's old song, Mystic Rhythms, about how, you know, there's just this oneness with the machine, this oneness with the environment that you're in, and this oneness with the community that you're getting to ride with. And yeah, for me, you know, this oneness with, you know, with my Lord and Savior too, while I'm riding, I really love it.
Yeah,
hey, I need to get off here in just a moment. It's letting me know, but, what do you got coming up this year? And, you got the Ride to the Quail again, and
we have, that event is gotten. So our two biggest events we do is one is called Why We Ride to the Quail. We're in our eighth invitational for that. We limit that now to 50 riders. It is an amazing way for inclusion, companionship. We do a ride from Southern California up to Monterey, 2 days of just camaraderie. It ends on Saturday morning at the Quail Motorcycle Gathering, which is like the Pebble Beach for things. But it's really about those nights sitting around the fire at Pismo Beach. And those riding through, and those experiences of pouring down rain, and you know those things.
The experiences and the relationships again,
And then the second big thing we have is then that Saturday night we've kind of broken things off. Like we do Why We Ride for Kids fundraising dinner, and that is a dinner that is not just us that attends. But anybody who goes to the Quail can buy a ticket and attend. We have a lot of local, really big sponsors like Harvest Construction that are not even motorcyclists but want to help. And that's the money where 100% of those funds go to the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation, which we've raised almost $100,000 for
our
last many years working with them. So those are our really two big events. And then, of course, what we Motivational, which is our nonprofit, we made that as an umbrella.
Motivational.org, yes.
Yeah. What that is we're a 501c3, but what we really built this for is for so anybody who wants to do something for fundraising but isn't a nonprofit but needs help or needs to put it underneath something so that they're those people who donate get a full tax refund, you can come to us and run on us. We have Biker Book of Charity. She's underneath us now.
I've got one up here.
You buy that book, it's under ours, 100% goes to that. We're doing the thing for soldiers right now, Patriots. For portraits, which is really cool. So we made that to help. When people do rides with 20, 30 people, but it's hard for people to write a check. But if it goes through our motivational, people will be able to give more. So it's really about a way for the Moto family to do what we love to do and help give and give back to this, to this world and to this community.
So, hey, are you going back to Sturgis this year? You guys doing the Sturgis wrap party?
We weren't. We did that for a couple of years, and it
was those were cool.
We couldn't turn it into what we wanted to. Last year, we had really big ideas with a certain OEM, but unfortunately, it did not come as we would have liked. So truthfully, the next time I go to Sturgis, I want to go there as a writer. I've never been to
go
Sturgis
and just writer. Ride it, man.
Yeah, I've been as a filmmaker, or I've been as a host for these big events. Yeah. When I go to Sturgis again, because my favorite place, I've been to 51 countries on this planet, and still the most beautiful place on this planet is Yellowstone. And I've been to every country in South America. But and riding through Yellowstone during the day on a motorcycle, those Tetons up through Yellowstone and those glaciers, it is next to ride that and riding in the Redwoods, the two most humbling places on Earth as a motorcycle rider is to ride.
Man, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, how can people keep in touch with you? You know, you out there on social media, any websites, anything?
Oh, yeah. Always go. Our biggest is we still have close to, a million followers between our Facebook page and our Instagram.
Facebook page.
Yeah. Facebook is really the best way because we are Instagram, but because of who our audience is, there's still strong Facebook. We're always posting new stuff on that. And you can also join our motivational group on Facebook, which is just motivational.
That's right.
Yeah.
The Why We Ride Facebook page called Look Up for Why We Ride and Motivational, which is the
nonprofit.
The interactive group. So
and we always
come on both of those. I love them. Yeah.
Yeah, we always have stuff and we really enjoy the articles that you post up there. They're great. Our command base and we're working on hopefully something coming up soon to extend go to the next level with our Why We Ride movie. We're trying to figure out what that might be. So we may have a surprise here in the next year or so.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing it. Absolutely. Well, Brian, I appreciate your time, man. Hang on just for a second. I'm going to end this and let it start rendering. And then you and I will get off here in just a minute.
No problem.
I appreciate you.
Well, we enjoyed this conversation with Brian Carroll. Hope you did as well. If you want to, check us out on social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find Road Dirt TV, the community, out across social media. Come out there and interact with us. Our main media site, where all of our writers and photographers all collaborate and contribute to stories and photo essays, things like that, you can find us at roaddirt.tv. That's our main e-magazine, as we call it. We've also got a YouTube channel, Road Dirt TV, where we post bike and gear reviews, rides, rallies, roads, we cover racing, all the stuff like that you can find out there in American Motorcycling. You can find us at Road Dirt TV. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, give us a 4 or 5 stars, give us a like, share us around, leave a comment. We'd love to talk. We'd love to chat with you. Love to talk with you. So, and subscribe to us, definitely. And until next time, this is Rob with Road Dirt, encouraging you to ride light.